Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hospice Survivors and Victims. I am your host, Carly Walden. We are going to be exposing, what's going on, the corruption in our medical field and the judicial system. This is very important. I wanted to first start off with, I always want to mention the hospice revocation. You can find that in the Medicare Benefit Policy Manual in Chapter 9, Section 20.2.2 through 20.2.4. And also, you can get a Protected Medical Decisions document at the PatientsRightsCouncil.org. Okay, and with that being said, we have a very good show tonight. It's very informative. We have Barbara Latham on with us, her attorney, Candace Schwager. And, this story is so unsettling that, we must have this conversation. So, Barbara's mother was killed in a hospice. So, Barbara, I wanted to give you this platform, this time, to tell us about what happened exactly to your mom.
Okay, thank you so much for having me on the show and helping others to expose this nightmare going on in our country.
Yes. Absolutely.
Otherwise, people don't know about it. In fact, when I mentioned it to people, and most people have had no experience. They really don't believe me, and they act like, yeah, I'm crazy or I'm a conspiracy theorist. So, but I'm used to that by now. But people who have experienced this know the truth.
Exactly.
It was unbelievable because she was age 93, excellent health. And had just, this was in November when guardianship took over a care of her in 2017. But just several months earlier, for the first time in her life, she was diagnosed with, you'd call it a chronic illness, which was congestive heart failure. But I did everything I could for her, including home health care. And you have to make sure it's home health care and not home hospice health care. And
home
health care, yeah. It's covered. If you have Medicare, it's covered 100% by Medicare. So it's very good. You get a home healthcare provider who can come out twice a week and provide showers. They can even do like housekeeping. Many times it's initiated because there's been a fall and they have a physical therapist that can provide physical therapy, get them back safely walking. by use of a walker and later a cane, and then on their own, quite possibly. And then you have a registered nurse who will come out usually once a week, and you can have a social worker come out. And whatever your primary care physician orders, that's basically what they will do. So that really helped her. And I'm an inactive registered nurse. I worked in psychiatric mental health nursing since 1979. And so with all, she had a lot going for her, and she was really as healthy and stable as she could be. I mean, her, you know, because I knew how to check her blood pressure and pulse, and so she was in excellent health as far as I'm concerned. Unfortunately, the guardian took possession, and in 30 days, her life was gone. And she took her on November 24th, and her life ended on Christmas Eve. So she, as I said, she was absolutely healthy. I wouldn't have been surprised. She was 93. Had she lived another 5 or 10 years, wouldn't have surprised me or longer.
Right.
She was doing so well. And
especially with your background being a nurse, I mean, you know, you would know information. And I'm so glad that you elaborated on home health care, because that is what I recommend to all families. And you do have to make sure that it's not hospice. So
absolutely.
Thank you for important. Oh, that is so important. Okay, so how did the guardian come into the picture? And, you know, what was the motive? Was the money involved?
Yes,
wanted to siphon off? What happened there?
Yes. Actually, in my case, and a lot of, you know, with a lot of other elderly, they're picked up by a social worker at a hospital or a doctor or maybe an investment seminar. These predators are looking for elderly with $100,000 or more. And so if you attend an investment seminar, they know you have money. You're going to be a target, so don't go. And if you be very careful going to elder care, certified elder care attorneys, because they're going to help you set up power of attorney, wills, and things like that, even a trust. You have to be extremely cautious, because all of these things are worthless once you are put into the probate court. In my case, it was my brother. It was quite shocking, because I would never have suspected that he would do such a thing. My mother had made me power of attorney, statutory, durable power of attorney, which would be over financial matters. That was going on for several years, no problems. I mean, the medical power of attorney, I took her to all her doctor's appointments. I was able to explain to her and the doctor and be a mediator between the two of them.
Did the medical power of attorney go to your brother at some point?
Well, I was the medical power of attorney. My mother appointed me medical power of attorney.
Okay, I guess I'm just wondering, how did the guardian come into the picture?
Okay. Well, my brother had, for several years been wanting my mother to get long-term care insurance. And my mother was intelligent. She knew that that meant that nursing home coverage, because Medicare is not going to cover nursing home. They do cover home health, but and they'll cover skilled nursing for several weeks. If you've been in the hospital recently, they're not going to cover long-term nursing home. But my mother didn't, she absolutely refused to pay. I mean, she went along with everything my brother suggested. She placed him on a pedestal, firstborn son. But this was just really a big turnoff to her. She never wanted to go to a nursing home. She lived alone since she was divorced, never remarried. She was divorced in 69 after her children. Well, I take that back. I was about 12 at the time that she divorced. She never, I mean, she dated, she never remarried, she never wanted to remarry, she enjoyed her independence. And but I started saying to her, Mom, I understand you want to live by yourself, you want to be independent. I said, but what if something did happen? I said, I would like you to come live with me and my husband, and he's agreed to it. And so she reluctantly said, well, okay, yeah, if that happened, I'll come live with you, but really I want to live alone. I like living alone. I like my independence. But my brother, for whatever reason, wanted this nursing home for her.
He was relentless in the pursuit of her getting a long-term nursing care.
And this was way before she needed it. I mean, and as a matter of fact, he did file for a guardianship before she needed it. So that's what he did. He called her on the phone one day and he informed her, Mom, I'm taking control of you and I'm going to take control of your money. Didn't tell her it was a guardianship. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what a guardianship was at that time. Having worked in psychiatry, I knew that you could have someone picked up under a mental health warrant for 72 hours. However, at the end of 72 hours, you'd be brought before the judge, and unless you were really, you know, insane, I mean, blatantly, I mean, anybody could see it, you know, you would be released after 72 hours. So that was an unfortunate part of the law that if say you didn't like somebody, you could play a dirty trick on them and have them picked up. But the good thing is it only lasted 72 hours. And then if they truly had no serious mental health issues, they would be let go. I thought this was something like that. And so I said, Mom, you know, and my sister was with me at the time, and we said, my sister said, Barbara, she needs to come home with you. And my mother, she agreed, and she grabbed her purse. She was a living alone in her apartment in a senior living community. She grabbed her purse to come home with me right then and there. And I said, okay. I said, you didn't pack anything, but I have everything you need. I can get you whatever you need. And I can also come back and get you what you need. So she came home with me, and we shortly, within a matter of days, found out that it was, in fact, a guardianship. So I had to learn real fast what a guardianship really was. Because like most people, I had no idea. It was probate court, but I thought that was for the deceased after they passed away. To,
right,
you
know, and this is a nightmare. Mm-hmm.
It absolutely was. And so I had to educate myself real fast, and it was very disturbing, because it is there is no, you know, you think of the judicial system as a lawful system with exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Especially you think of criminal, you know, misconduct, where people are falsely accused of things and given sentences and turns out, you know, when DNA evidence comes out, you know, it was wrong. But I had no idea this existed. And so,
right.
But
so basically your brother successfully got the guardian.
Well, he applied for guardianship, okay? It was mm-hmm. never actually given to him. I mean, she died before that happened, but that went on from March until she died in December. So for 9 months, it was never she was given a temporary guardian, but there was no trial, there was no due process. It was a nightmare. I kept her in my home. I had all kinds of people coming to my home to see. If she's designated me as the person in all
mm-hmm.
of her documents, I mean, there's got to be clear and convincing evidence that I'm inappropriate to provide for her in my home. And there was never, I mean, I had many people coming to my home, including the temporary guardian, her appointed attorney ad litem.
Mm-hmm.
I had the court reporter. I was actually, before my brother filed, I was reported to Adult Protective Services for abuse. And so all these people interviewed me. My mother came out to where she was living. There was nothing found ever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it
That's
was
so
none
sickening.
Of it was it was it none of it was it was totally illogical, irrational. It followed no constitutional laws that I ever was aware of.
Right.
I mean, only broke
right.
them all. And so, but I had police welfare checks constantly, APS visits. I was detained by police officers at one point. I had 5 armed HPD officers descend upon me. And
are
yeah,
you serious?
I mean, you
for what
yeah,
possible
when I was,
reason?
Well, when I moved my mother out of her apartment, I did not move her furniture because I didn't know how long she would be with me. She was
right.
not, at that time, she was not ill. Now, coincidentally or not, and I don't think it was coincidence, I don't believe in coincidences, but
uh-huh.
I believe the stress just took over her body and mind, because 1 month after she came to live with me, she developed the congestive heart failure. I know it was the stress. Because
yes,
my brother,
of course.
She loved him so much, and she just thought the world of him. He was on a pedestal, and for him
right.
to do this to her was just so devastating. I know it was.
Oh,
and,
sure it is. Sure it is.
So she became very ill and went from someone who lived independently She needed, she did need some assistance paying her bills, which I had been doing for her for years. But it was, you know, everything was put on automatic payment. It was really nothing once I got it set up. But he told, you know, when you file for guardianship, you have to say that there's no alternatives, that they've been considered, and that's what he said, that there were no alternatives to guardianship. And when, in fact, she was, I mean, my God, she was living with me, she recovered remarkably from that initial diagnosis of congestive heart failure. She was doing excellent. She still had problems. She had balance problems. She was a very high fall risk. But
that's normal. I mean, with age and, old age.
Absolutely. And so, but I kept her as long as I could, but I was caring for her all by myself. And in anybody in normal circumstances, caring for their elderly loved one, especially all by themselves, is quite stressful. But when you have a terror campaign waged against you by a court system, and it's also financially draining and scary to have police come to your door. How many police officers knock on the wrong door and there ends up being shooting of an innocent life over that? I mean,
That's right.
And so that was very scary.
I can't imagine that. That's baffling.
Absolutely. By November, my whole family was affected. Not just me, not just my mother. I feared for all of our lives, and I don't know if people are familiar with, there was a story about the Holocaust. It reminds me of Sophie's Choice and the Nazis. At one point, this young mother was with her two a son and a daughter, young children, and when she got off the train at the concentration camp, the Nazi told her, "You choose your son or your daughter, we are going to put them to death. And you have a minute to choose. If you do not choose, we're going to put both to death." And so because her young daughter was younger, daughter was clinging to her, she had to choose her daughter, and that's why the movie was called Sophie's Choice. It was just an impossible choice to make. And so I felt like I was having an impossible choice to make. I was forced to choose my mother or perhaps one or more family members, or perhaps all of us. I mean, I did not know. It was scary as heck. So I thought at least I had gotten a wonderful attorney by that time. By the grace of God, I found the one of two attorneys that were available in the Houston area at that time.
Correct?
Right, absolutely, Candace Schwager. And I thought I at least have a chance, you know.
Let me ask you this. I don't mean to interrupt at all, but when your mother, she was put into a hospice, correct, by this guardian?
Yes.
Okay.
They
gave her the diagnosis.
It was
of congestive heart failure.
It was
no,
absolutely No. She had already been diagnosed with congestive heart failure, which, by the way, depending on the individual, you can live a short time or live many years with that diagnosis. It just
yes,
all
I
depends
can.
On your state of health and your lifestyle. I mean, it's just
yes,
like
yes. When
else.
my grandmother was misdiagnosed, anyway, she had congestive heart failure. She's been alive 4 years longer.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you're absolutely right. People
yeah.
can
oh,
live
yeah.
with congestive
yeah.
heart failure
yeah.
with LASIK.
Absolutely. If she's well
mm-hmm.
cared for, has an excellent diet, is happy living with family, that kind of thing, she can live for many, many years. I mean, it makes a big difference. Just like anybody
yes,
with any or no health conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was I had to make Sophie's choice, and I was told nothing. The whole from the hospital to hospice to the funeral, 4 weeks, I was lied to, I was kept, I was banned from visiting all but about three or four occasions. The hospitals, the facilities were lied to about me before my mother even entered them and told I was a troublemaker. I was just portrayed as the worst criminal. And
this is what they do in retaliation.
Yeah,
so I want the audience
everybody,
to know.
They report every good family member, usually the one with the power of attorney, and that's an obstacle.
Yes.
They villainize that person. And the lies are unbelievable. I mean, you'll hear, women break down crying when they tell how they were lied about, and they're
mm-hmm.
good, decent people who have worked so hard for their parent and
mm-hmm.
sacrificed so much, and they are villainized by the court. And
yes,
this is all lawyer hearsay. There's no truth to it. They don't have to back it up. You don't get to refute any of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a kangaroo court. I mean, basically.
It is.
Is
you know,
what
it
is.
And it's also what we call, it is the modern day Holocaust. Where, these guardians are going through our loved ones, their estates, their money that they worked for their whole life, and then they're sending them off to their death camp, which is hospice,
absolutely.
Where they're getting lethal drug cocktails. Yes.
Yes. And ironically, my mother, our family is Jewish, and my mother...
Mm-hmm.
Because she was in high school, young 20s, during the 1940s when the actual Holocaust was going on in Germany, Eastern Europe, she was very aware of the news, and the rest of her life she was affected personally, even though we didn't have any family members. Our ancestors did move from Eastern Europe to Escutia. We didn't have actual Holocaust victims.
Okay.
However, she spent many years volunteering at the Holocaust Museum of Houston, Texas, and it just gave her a great feeling to know that she was volunteering, and she felt so passionately about the Holocaust of millions of people that she,
right.
this is what she did. This is, she felt good about herself, that it gave a lot of meaning to her life. And that's the irony about the thing.
Yes, that is, I was going to say, that's the exact word that came to my mind. That is mm-hmm. the irony. And then for her to become the victim of
mm-hmm.
the modern day Holocaust is occurring in mm-hmm. many hospices throughout the globe, but
mm-hmm.
especially
mm-hmm.
in the United States.
Absolutely.
And a lot of it, you know, it's stealth euthanasia where they do it
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
in a way that families don't even pick up. They tell them that morphine is good for the breathing when it shuts the breathing down.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. It slows it down. It represses it. I mean, that's the whole opiate crisis now. People are dying because they're unaware that they are overdosing and they are shutting down their respiratory system and dying over this stuff.
Right. Right.
And just think about that. The hospices
are using this.
They do know. Yeah.
And
what's very disturbing is I'm inactive, but I was a registered nurse for 30 years. I was certified as a clinical nurse specialist, advanced nurse practitioner. I know
mm-hmm.
all this.
Okay.
And to see registered nurses participating in this nowadays is just,
mm-hmm.
it was so devastating to me that, and I'm sorry to say this is happening in all areas of our society, our food, air, water, everything, not just
mm-hmm.
our medical care.
But,
mm-hmm. I mean, the way I was talked to by the
mm-hmm.
nurses in the hospital, the hospice, the lack
mm-hmm.
of any caring concern, I mean, when I went to nursing school and I worked as a nurse for many years, I would have absolutely been fired, lost my license.
Exactly.
Imagine any of this unethical, immoral, inhuman treatment of patients. It was frightening. Absolutely.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you brought. Yeah, I mean, this is unbelievable what we're all facing, and
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm glad that you brought that up about nurses currently that are in this profession and they're doing this. We need to get back to a moral compass where, you know, we understand you have kids and all this and mortgages, but you don't kill people.
Absolutely.
You know,
no,
because of
no,
that.
No. Absolutely. And I'll tell you something else. You know, we have cancer patients. We have people in severe pain who may be in hospice. I'm going to tell you, my mother did not have severe pain. And she may have had a fall, and she has had falls, but she has managed with physical therapy and a
mm-hmm.
really light dosage of a opiate pain medicine by mouth. And
yes.
only until her pain went away. And they were all of a sudden, and I can tell you she was not, I mean, when you have a fall and 3 weeks later you go from half of a minor pain
yeah.
pill taking
yeah.
injectable morphine,
yeah.
there's something wrong there. That's
yes.
a major flag. And so these nurses are administering I mean, you can't even administer pain medicine without documenting the existence of severe pain, the results of giving the medication. I mean, it's all falsification of documentation. And
yes, it
that
is.
What they found in the, you know, in recently or a year ago in the Novus case north of Dallas, the hospice, there was a lot of, you know, the documentation was, I mean, it's all false. I mean,
they do. They falsify the documents, yes,
because they
can cover up what they're doing.
Right, right. As a nurse, that is just such a no-no. It's like number one no-no. I mean, it was unthinkable to do that when I started. I don't care what the issue was. You do not, you document exactly what happened. If you did make a mistake, you admit it. You call the doctor, you rectify as best you can what happened, but you do not lie in your documentation or cover up. You will lose your license and your job, and it's just unthinkable. It's just unethical and immoral.
It is. And, you know, it really is. This is the culture of death that we has been indoctrinated into the medical field. And like you said, they're being trained, you know, to do these things. And, you know, somewhere somebody's, you know, they know what they're doing. That's the thing that bothers me the most is how can you sleep at night?
Right. And I think about that a lot. I think about my brother. How does he sleep at night? And I think if he is sleeping at night, it would have to mean that he truly doesn't know that what he would have to be absolutely criminally insane to not know what he did was wrong, or I can't imagine sleeping at night. Right. I just can't imagine it.
Mm-hmm. Right, because it is. It's like a Stephen King, you know, movie. It's terrible, and it's reality.
Yes. It's very scary because these are, I don't know, I can't speak for all the nurses, but I suspect a lot of them are new nurses, young nurses, and they are perhaps being subjected to peer pressure and being taught that this is okay. It's scary because this is our next generation of leaders.
I know it.
I mean,
it is.
We see our children, the terrible state of our children nowadays. And they're not able to, you know, the breakdown of the family. Dennis Ball talks about that. There is no moral, ethical guidance that you can't have it without a mother or a father, unless you have an extremely strong mother or father figure guiding you, as well as extended family. But the extended family is being destroyed. That would be grandparents who care for children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's very scary. It's got to be changed. Shows like yours.
Yes, it does.
Absolutely, people have to be made aware, or it must change, or there is no hope. without awareness.
Right.
And change.
Right. And, you know, I'm so thankful. You know, this is what my show is about, is we are sounding the alarm to the world, you know, do not go through this. Do not,
No.
How did Miss Candace, I know she's on the line, she's been so quiet, so patient. Thank you, Candace. How did she come in to the picture, Barbara, with helping you with this?
There are some wonderful advocacy groups out there. There's NASGA, AAAPG, and one of those groups, I started reading on the internet, and I came into contact with these groups, and one of the groups, they're very good about reaching out to people who call them, and I called and I asked, I said, is there any attorney in the Houston area who is able to help me with this? Because I already had attorneys that they every one of them turned me down, or if they did accept my case, they were, I was basically getting stabbed in the back, basically.
Right.
They were part of the problem, not part of the solution. And so one of these advocacy groups, and they're all wonderful, and I don't want to give credit to one over the other, but I'll tell people, go through NASA, go through AAAPG, and I know there's many more, but this person gave me Candace's name, and she immediately gave me hope and said she would help me. And she started immediately, and it was like God. It was like I knew.
That's amazing.
There is a God. I mean, there have been a few times in my life, even since I was a small child, that I know God is alive, or this or that would not possibly have happened. But I know again, there is a God. Whatever anybody wants to call it, that's what I choose to call it, because there she was, and God sent her in my mind.
Yeah, here you are in an impossible situation with all odds against you, and it is a David versus Goliath type of situation. And it does have to change, but it's going to take that we are hoping we are going to change. We are going to make change.
Yeah.
We are making a dent now. How did Candace, what compelled you as an attorney when most attorneys turn these cases down? What compelled you to take the case?
Well, I had already been through, sorry if I get upset, but I had already been through two deaths as I was writing emergency motions to save the women's lives. And I saw when Barbara came to me, they were trying to prosecute her. They were threatening her with jail. She was so upset. She could barely think. And I just said, I read one of the transcripts where her attorney referred to her as a criminal. And I just said, your attorneys are selling you down the river. And I said, I don't know that we can win, but I said, I'll damn sure come in and make a record. And that was one of the things that I felt that God showed me, was that, you know, if nothing else, go in there and make a darn good record. Because I felt in the first two deaths that later I got this kind of real strong feeling that I wasn't meant to win after I had lost. And I didn't think so at the time. I went in there fighting like heck. because I thought I could win. I've won my whole life. I've worked for super lawyers in the top of the profession. I've really never lost. I had no idea I was walking into organized crime. And by the time Barbara came along, I definitely knew. But I definitely knew that she was going to go under if I didn't jump in. And I wasn't intimidated by these people anymore because I know they don't know how to do litigation. And that's my specialty. Mm-hmm. And so I just jumped in, and I was almost insulting. Well, I was insulting to the lawyers. Who were in that case, because it just so happened the same law firm who had been involved in a racketeering case that was filed by a friend of mine and in the other death case of a friend of mine who's now in the federal courts and moving forward very successfully. That case was horrible. I was threatened with contempt, but I just knew, I don't know, I had this confidence, this real boldness that that if I just kept moving forward, that God would have my back. And so I made a list, if you want to hear a few things, of what is going on.
Absolutely.
And,
please share, yes.
This is like a conspiracy. And so I put what's going on is that in hospice, they're billing for services not rendered. They're billing Medicare for services not medically necessary, like $86,000 in diagnostic testing until I came in and subpoenaed their records and they took $70,000 off. They're busting trust to pour it into probate where they can double dip. They can double dip in the guardianship and the probate. And by the way, Muriel Mintz was never served. And so it's a virtual, it is a kidnapping. She was never served with process, so there was no jurisdiction over her. They took her estate. They took her person. And so when I entered the case, I made the comment of, where does this guardian get the power of the KGB to it's in the transcript. It's actually hilarious read. But I said that, and the guardian comes into the court and says, that, you know, I just need the Department of Homeland Security and the federal government to know that I've never been with the KGB and I'm not now. And I'm thinking, don't you know they disbanded like 30 years ago? And so later I told her, I didn't mean to be insulting. My client is Jewish, but this woman is not. She's a Nazi. And so I told her, I said, I guess I shouldn't have called you the KGB. I should have called you the Gestapo. And anyway, and so they violate federal regulations prohibiting the administration of psychotropic drugs to the elderly unless they have schizophrenia because they kill you if you have cardiac problems. They deliberately conspire to starve and dehydrate and the life and people are not terminal. And they use the age as an excuse. And the thing is, nobody deserves to die like this. I don't care how old they are. And nobody deserves to starve to death. And you know, nobody deserves to be starved to death and found in a ball whimpering as they saw her mother all alone, scared because nobody was there with her and they wouldn't let Barbara see her. Barbara saw her four days the whole month. Her sister saw her 2 days and they threatened them and threw them out and they were prohibited from sharing information with the doctors or getting information when they were the only ones who knew anything about her. They withheld critical information from the hospital about her congestive heart failure so that they could stop her medications and fill her lungs with fluid and then say, well, she's going downhill. Then they inflicted pain with urinary tract infections by leaving her in the bed with, you know, Foley catheters that weren't cleaned. They subjected her to sepsis by people that weren't weren't washing their hands. They concealed their attention to hasten death. And what is the difference between hasten death and murder? That's what I want to know. By banning her daughters.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it is, too. Conspiring to cover up.
Politically correct.
And I thought, why do I have to be? They were jumping my butt because I wasn't politically correct. And I thought, well, I apologize for not being politically correct in the midst of an emergency where you're killing someone. that interfering with Latham's agency for disposition of her mother's remains. She, when a guardianship's over when someone died, that this guardian had to get a court order to take over the funeral, and she didn't. She just took over and steamrolled Barbara. And all of a sudden at the court hearing, she said, well, I don't know who identified the body, and I can't confirm that Muriel Mintz is actually in that casket. And the federal judge went, excuse me?
Uh-huh.
You never get to do discovery, and suddenly the federal judge issued an order and told me to start discovery and start depositions. You don't get to do that. And so we started. We got all these medical records that showed Muriel was screaming to get out of the hospital and trying to pull out her IV, and they drugged her with Haldol to knock her out, and then decided that her life wasn't worth living and put her on hospice. And they failed to notify the sisters that the mother was put on hospice. They hid the fact that they put her on hospice weeks earlier so they could starve her. Then they tried to accuse Barbara and her sister of substandard care. But at the same time, this guardian turned around and tried to accuse Barbara of skilled nursing to attack her nursing license. They created the conditions to... her sister explained they created the conditions of death that would qualify her for hospice or make it look like she qualified. She had no condition that would have justified morphine, but morphine makes you unable to swallow, and it helps starve you to death. So the reason Barbara was kicked out was because she fed her mother, and I thought, well, this is a real good idea. Let's starve her to death so we're not responsible for choking her. And so the hospice certified that she was terminal, but they never said what the disease was. The medical examiner was involved. We called the medical examiner, and I said, well, do you investigate for murder? And he said, no, I just investigate for accidents. And I said, well, who in the world investigates for murder then? You're the medical examiner. Mm-hmm. And he refused to answer us, and I thought, this is a really weird thing. Then we went to the funeral. Listen to this. We went to the funeral. There was only about a 2-foot pole dug where you couldn't bury a casket. A friend of mine, who's a client, said, there's no body in that casket. And it really freaked me out. But during the hearing, the guardian was just babbling at the mouth, telling the federal judge that, well, Jewish law requires this and Jewish law requires that. And she said she has to be buried within 24 hours. She wasn't buried for 72. And and she was going on and on about how we don't cremate. And I told the brother that if he's going to cremate, I'm out of here. And I thought, nobody's even mentioned cremation. Well, then I get a receipt from some cremation company showing that, first of all, that this guardian got a significant refund. So the funeral was already paid for. And she took an $11,000 check to pay for a funeral, and then she got a kickback, it looks like, of half the money. So they put on a fake funeral where we went and thought the body was actually in a casket, and I can guarantee you it wasn't, and we're fixing to find out. That.
Oh, my God.
This judge had testified in 2006 for the Texas Senate that his court was one of the busiest probate courts in the nation. He called his court a $3 billion business per year, a business. He testified the volume of business. Yeah, he said the volume of business he handles is why he makes the big bucks. The senators nearly fell out, and they were like, you know what, I'm going to have to go back and explain that to my constituents, and I can't believe you just said that. And so what they do is this same judge admitted to holding 5 jury trials in a 13-year period, when all of these people are entitled to due process and a constitutional right to a jury before they're stripped of all their rights. There was no hearing. The judge, they did not follow the procedures to get a temporary guardianship. He told them to go out in the hall, pick a guardian, or they would, when she'd never been served. And she wasn't present. The guardian was supposed to be present at the hearing, and he called her on the phone. She wasn't even there. There was a network of complicit living facilities, private ambulances, hospitals, doctors who rubber stamp stuff. you know, drug companies who, you know, provide these dangerous drugs. They were threatening contempt and jail to anyone who rocks the boat, including me. And I once heard from a source that they were going to get rid of me. I have no idea what that means, but it kind of tripped me up a little bit, and I wanted to know, what does that mean, you're going to get rid of me? And I thought, well, we're going to have to deal with that because nobody's getting rid of me. And, you know.
Right.
No. And so I just remember a long time ago, there's a lot of people praying for me, and I thought, there's no way you're going to touch me. But there's a prayer that I've been praying since the beginning of this case of those who set a trap will fall into it. And it's in Proverbs. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't believe how they open their mouth, stick both feet in their mouth, and say all this stuff to a federal judge, which hangs them. And so now we're going to the Fifth Circuit, and we are going to, in my opinion, establish law for five states that there is no immunity. And we already have a case where we had a ruling on that. There's no immunity.
Okay.
So that's what they've been hiding behind. They think they have immunity. They go kill people, and then they can't be held accountable. Well, not anymore. And,
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
so this has been
coming
a long time, you know?
Yes.
And they've dug such a deep hole, they're never getting out of it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's the main thing I had to share.
Yeah, the more attention this gets, the more judges, the legal system are going to have to pay attention and act accordingly. Because this was...
Well, you wouldn't believe how... You wouldn't believe... Yeah, you wouldn't believe how they're falling into the trap that... I didn't set it for them, they're setting it for themselves. But every time I walk into a probate court, I get sanctioned $10,000. And I'm like, when you finish with this, I'm going to sue the crap out of all of you. Because Title 42 U.S.C. 12203 says that you can't retaliate. And what do you think they're doing?
They're retaliating, of course.
This is the other thing they do is that they, in order to wear out their opponent, being a good attorney like Candace, one of the few willing to fight, and the opponents like myself who love their parent and are willing to fight, what they do is they charge you, they take your money from you so that you have no money to fight. In my case, this is why I said trusts are no safety. There's no safety in a trust. My mother opened a trust for me, and I was accused of stealing money from my own money, my own trust. I was accused of stealing from myself. But here's the thing, they don't have to prove anything. And so
they're actually supposed to. Yeah. Here's the thing,
they froze my funds so that I could not pay.
Ray, we're getting close. I mean, this is just,
this is
I wish we had another hour to go.
This is what
because,
they do.
Oh, we could go on.
The nail right on the head.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
This is what we need to hear.
Endless tricks and traps that they use.
That's the name of their article. They were foolish enough to write an article with the judge called Tricks and Traps, you know? And so I thought, you know what's so funny? I said that scripture, those who set a trap will fall into it. And we found that article, Tricks and Traps. And I thought, well, that's hilarious. And
thankful. You know, we're gonna have to continue this conversation. I don't know where you guys are at right now, you know, with your litigating and with the case, but we're gonna, you know, we have got to continue this conversation. This is just
We're going to the Fifth Circuit, and this will affect 5 states, Georgia, Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana, and Texas.
Wow.
Wonderful.
It's going to be good.
Well, I just want to thank you, ladies, look, for sharing. And Barbara, you are a true fighter. I am so, so thankful to know you. Yes.
Well, Barbara's a hero.
Thank you so much.
Right.
I thank people like you, Candace, these wonderful advocacy organizations, and the wonderful just people that on Facebook that are have the courage to tell their stories and spread the word to people. I mean, if it wasn't for all of these individuals, I don't know where I'd be today.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I don't.
And it's, you know, that's
well, we
right.
will catch
that's...
up with you soon. Our appeal just got filed, and we'll catch up with you when we get closer to a ruling.
Please do,
I
ladies. Don't... I am so, I am all ears. I want to get you guys right back on as soon as you can, really.
Okay.
Because
thank
this is
you.
What
thank
people
so
need
much.
To hear. Okay, and with that, we're going to end the show this evening. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. And we will be back with Barbara and Candace and continuing the conversation on saving lives. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
All right.
And Marty,
Yes, thank you, Candace, so, so very much. And for being an honest attorney, thank God. Thank God for you.
Thank you. Yes. That makes me want to cry. It's so sweet.
Absolutely.
No, I'm serious.
Absolutely.
You know, people, I've lived through this. So, you know, we really appreciate people like you. Yes. So, with that, we've gone past our show. So, we will definitely be back on. And I'm going to hang up now, ladies. And you guys have a wonderful evening.
Thank
you,
Carly. You
too. Thank you so much.
Okay,
thank you to all your listeners. God bless all of you.
Thank you so much. Oh, thank you so much, Barbara. Okay. All right, guys. All right. Y'all have a great evening. All right. Bye-bye.